We have until 6 o'clock when there's an RT to do our first question and answer panel type discussion. And we'll have two of these. And this first one was planned, and it looks like it's going to work out all right. Whoever registered before coming here was sent an opportunity to ask whatever question you'd like on the topic of exploring Guru Tattva. So we received a number of questions, and those are the questions that we'll be dealing with now. And I don't think we're going to get through them all. And another session will take place on Sunday, and the three of us will be here for that session. And once again, you'll all have an opportunity to ask more questions. And how those questions will be made available to us, here's one thought. By now you probably know who Satyasara is. He's the one that's running around and running around and on a cell phone and running around. Where is he? There he is. There he is. With his backpack on and full of goodies, ready to rescue anybody.
He's off somewhere, huh?
Whoever's got a problem, he's got a backpack for it. So, and so in writing, you submit something to him. And he'll see that we get an electronic version, and off we go. Alternatively, Ajita, who is doing the registration at the registration table, he's waving his hand right up front. He can receive your questions, and similarly, they'll be put together, and that's what we'll work on Sunday. Of course, during class time, after class time, questions and answers also. Okay? That's our plan. So, you just spoke, right?
Yes.
So I'm going to address a question that I think is appropriate for Ravindra Swarup Prabhu to answer because he spoke about it this morning. Well, he made reference to Prabhupada's essay on the spiritual master, and in that essay there was reference to the following. The spiritual master is described as being the sum total of all the demigods. What does that mean? You got a microphone? Here's a microphone. We all each have a microphone. What does that mean?
Sarva Deva Maya, right? Maya, when it's a suffix, means composed or made of. All the devas. That's what it means. So I've never read it's just very loosely translated. But to me, it means that from all the devas, there come various benedictions and gifts and blessings and so on. So whatever is available from all the devas is available from the bona fide acharya. That's my understanding.
If the person who asks this question wants to pursue, you know, a follow-up type of question, you can raise your hand, otherwise we're going to move on. I'm satisfied.
There's a lot of devas, by the way. People say 33 million, but it's actually 33 crore. If you look in the Sanskrit, it's crore, 33 koti. That means 330 million. Not 33 million, as conventionally stated, just by the way.
And this question seems to be right up your alley. Let's see. This is an ISKCON one. More and more it is commonly spoken by senior devotees in ISKCON that an aspiring disciple has to ask their spiritual master for initiation. I strongly feel that it is the spiritual master. Not what you think it's going to say. That has to decide when the disciple should get initiated. What is the etiquette that a disciple should follow? Can you kindly elaborate?
If I understood the question right, a couple things. One, we know from Shastra that both the guru is supposed to test the disciple, and the disciple is supposed to test the guru. So at least those two processes are both there, that it's the guru who decides whether or not to accept the disciple, certainly. And it's the disciple who has to themselves determine who do I feel can connect me with Krishna, deliver me from this material world, provide spiritual knowledge, set an example like that. So those two sides are there. And then is the question talking about, like, say, a temple president having to...
More and more it is commonly spoken by senior devotees in ISKCON that an aspiring disciple has to ask their spiritual master for initiation. I strongly feel that the spiritual master has to decide when the disciple should get initiated. What is the etiquette?
It's both.
They do. But I just, yeah. So he's both. A luminary. He'll explain everything.
It's both because the disciple, it's their choice who they choose as a spiritual master. Prabhupada says, and remember, that, you know, I'm trying to think, Satsumarsh also had a book about this, that it's, I remember him specifically saying it's more important than the choice of a spouse. So one should be very careful in terms of selecting spiritual master. And we know in ISKCON there's many spiritual masters who are qualified to represent Prabhupada and bring us to Krishna. And the disciple has to make the decision based on who I feel I can have faith in and I have trust in, and who is speaking on behalf of Prabhupada and Krishna, and who has set an example for me to follow, and who I feel is committed to Krishna. And the guru also certainly has the decision. Do I want to accept this person as my disciple? Now in ISKCON there's a recommendation process that Prabhupada himself had in place. Prabhupada would have the temple presidents give the recommendation if a candidate is ready to be initiated. Sometimes devotees may not be aware of that and think, well, why is this process, why do I have to wait on the, why does the temple president have to give an approval? That's actually a process that Prabhupada put in place himself. So he had this kind of, you could say, intermediary was there within, that there would be a person in, as an authority in ISKCON, who's spending time with the candidate, knows the candidate, and would also give their approval. So in that sense, it's kind of a three-way. It's a three-way decision.
Does the person who asked this question want to ask a follow-up question? Has your question been satisfied?
You strongly feel something else.
No, he just wants clarification on something.
Just because it's strongly felt.
The reason I ask that question is there's some kind of a understanding that a disciple can just, after the process that you were explaining just now.
All three.
Identifying the spiritual master and the spiritual master and the disciple examining each other. It's like the disciple can just go and ask the spiritual master, please give me initiation now. Is that etiquette on the part of the disciple, or what should be the proper etiquette in that spiritual master-disciple relationship?
Yeah, well, thank you. The etiquette within our society is first, for a certain period of time, I think it's 6 months.
Minimum.
I think.
Oh, but minimum?
Yeah. That we should encourage all new devotees, that Prabhupada is our founder Acharya, he's the preeminent Siksha Guru for everyone. You should read Prabhupada's books, chant Prabhupada's pranam, build a relationship with Prabhupada and his society. taking spiritual instruction from so many devotees, gradually be aware there's different Diksha Gurus with an ISKCON, build a relationship, and then for a minimum of 6 months to be dedicated to a particular spiritual master, chanting their pranam prayers, and then again it's the spiritual master says yes with the approval of the temple president, then they can be initiated.
Supposing someone, to help him, supposing someone's done that and they've been, you know, practicing Krishna consciousness for 2 years, and 3 years, and 4 years, and counting. Now what's the etiquette? Should they just wait until someone taps them on the shoulder and says, "Hey, Prabhu, what do you think?" Or should they take the initiative from their side, or can it go either way? What's the etiquette?
So the aspiring disciple has not yet established a relationship.
No, they've done all the things that you said, and it's, you know, and some time has passed.
Okay.
A year, two, 3 years have passed.
And
they're like wondering, okay, now what should I do? Should I wait till my spiritual master approaches me and says,
uh-huh,
or should I take the initiative and say, or what's the etiquette?
I'm going to defer to the two spiritual masters on the panel.
I haven't said anything yet. So, it depends. Depends on the person, depends on the spiritual master, depends on their mood, depends on, you know, the relationship, it depends on the local temple president. You know, it depends on so many variables. So there's not like a fixed etiquette. It depends.
I would assume that there's some kind of a relationship.
Yeah.
And the prospective disciple can say, why is it taking so long? And, so-and-so got initiated. But, and that, so there can be a discussion.
Yeah.
And why? And you're right, there's the local recommending authority, too. That person may be withholding a recommendation because of something. But there should be open lines of communication, I would think, to settle these things up, right?
Yeah, so then the etiquette is communicate. But you know the nature of that communication depends on on those variables. Something that I sometimes do, not always, but I'm going to say commonly do, is when I'm getting the sense that a person is approaching, it's not a number of years, but they're approaching some kind of qualification, I ask them to give consideration to what they feel they need to do to improve themselves and help become more fit representative of the disciplic succession, and discuss that with those who you work very closely with, your temple president or those guiding you and so forth, and have that interactive dialogue with them, and then come up with a plan of self-improvement and work on that for some period of time, 6 months, a year, or whatever, you know, like, so there's actually some, so the goal is not, you know, the pure devotee bell rings and now I'm ready for initiation. That's not, but there's movement towards, you know, self-evaluation, all those important things. That's something that I commonly do. That was what you're looking for. Okay, here's another, I think, very suited for Rabindranath Prabhu question. The grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada are in a unique position with Srila Prabhupada as the founder acharya, along with their initiating spiritual master, meaning he's both for them. The grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada are in a unique position with Srila Prabhupada as the founder acharya, along with their initiating spiritual master, and the need to focus on both of them. There we go. There's a possibility that it could prove to be difficult for some. How can this be overcome? I mean, the language is, you get the idea of the question.
I don't see why there should be a difficulty. Is the difficulty paying enough attention to your Diksha Guru as to Srila Prabhupada, or is it the other way around, you're paying attention, you know, being involved with Diksha Guru and not so much with Srila Prabhupada?
I'm a second generation devotee, and I have my Guru, and I'm a second generation devotee, and I have Srila Prabhupada, and I have to have a place, a special place for Prabhupada and a special place for my initiating Guru.
Okay.
And I might get, like, you know, confused. How do I manage that?
So they have two separate places. First of all, Prabhupada's special position, I think, is contained in the idea of being the founder Acharya. Because that special place should be for all ISKCON members for as long as there is an ISKCON. You just right now, people who are grand disciples of Prabhupada actually have the association of people who knew and remembered Srila Prabhupada. Shortly, that won't be the case, and things will change again. But Prabhupada should not fade into the background for subsequent generations just because of that. I mean, one of the things that we are doing and that this book that I did for the GBC was to looking at that time where there won't be anybody on the planet who had any direct experience of Srila Prabhupada. And so that'll be a big change. We know from the history of religions that whenever the founder goes away, then that's you go through a crisis. That's one. Then the next crisis is when all the original witnesses are gone. Scholars say anyway that the Christian Gospels didn't really get written down until, you know, some of the original disciples were getting pretty old, and somebody said, "Hey, you know those stories you tell? you should." Write them down, because we won't know anybody anymore. So that's like a second big transition. And so we want to make sure that place of Srila Prabhupada is conveyed by those words, founder Acharya. And just as, for example, in the Madhva Sampradaya, Madhva has a special place, and Ramanuja has a special place in his community or Sampradaya. So similarly, Srila Prabhupada always has that special place. His books will always be important. They'll always be read. They won't go. He won't become one guru in the past. So I think that all of us are trying to make sure that this position of Srila Prabhupada is very well established. And all gurus in ISKCON will be servants of the founder Acharya, not just the first generation of people after Prabhupada. They'll all be servants of Srila Prabhupada. And and Prabhupada has given us, in his writings and teachings and translation, access to our whole tradition. There's a great deal more. It has never been translated, never been talked about, and so on. And so through Srila Prabhupada, we'll also access all our previous acharyas, especially from Lord Chaitanya on down.
Did the person who asked that question want to ask a follow-up, or it's you're satisfied, whoever you are out there? You would ask that one too. Okay, repeat the answer next one.
Okay.
Thank you.
So Anuttama Prabhu has been teaching, not only teaching, he helped create the disciple course. And if anybody doesn't know what the disciple course is, you will soon. Those of you that are not yet first initiated will be required to take the disciple course. And those that have first initiation but have not yet received second initiation, before receiving second initiation, will have to take the disciple course. And those that have received first and second initiation, it's recommended that you take the disciple course. And he's one of the responsible people for putting it together and teaching it multiple times now. So he's like, he knows it inside and out. And this question is related to one of the topics that's covered in the disciple course. And the question reads as follows. I can read it. Gurus who have fallen down and reinitiation becomes a question. Considering that Guru is one, dash, Krishna, who descends through the medium of the Guru Parampara, is it the case that the Guru can appear in the form of an initiating spiritual master, give you the real mantra with the proper conception of the holy name, and then disappear from that form? Parentheses, falling down or something like that. Is there any need for a disciple who has such a guru to take reinitiation from another guru? Question mark. Sure, you can look at it again. You want clarification from the person? You got it?
So the first question, I think it's two. It seems to imply the question, if one takes initiation and then that spiritual master, you know, gives up the devotional service, falls down, is their initiation still intact? Seems to be the question. And then, is there a need for a disciple who has such a guru to take reinitiation? Well, we've seen in our society, I mean, initially we didn't have so much understanding that these problems may happen. We've seen over the last 40 so years that it's not easy to be a spiritual master. I'll make one comment just from my work with Rabindra Swarup Prabhu, and Shraddha also helped, and the group of devotees that helped pull together this disciples course.
Oh.
Yes, they also share responsibility. That I can say, having helped put that together and then teaching it, it's really increased my understanding tenfold about what it means to be a guru in ISKCON. And I think the first thing that I came to understand is that there's probably no more difficult service, and that gurus in ISKCON, as Rabindra Swarup Prabhu said a few minutes ago, they are servants of Prabhupada, and they are the devotees that have understood that so deeply that they are willing to take on this tremendous responsibility and obligation to Prabhupada to try to care for others in the disciplic succession. It's really, you know, sometimes from the point of view of kind of a devotee or a disciple or maybe a god brother or god sister of a devotee that's taken on this responsibility, it may just seem like, you know, it's a position, or it's something that's we may kind of depersonalize it almost, but actually it's a phenomenal commitment. I know, like, some of you here are temple managers or bhakti vriksha leaders, whatever, and you know what it's like when you have other devotees that depend upon you and maybe call you in the middle of the night once in a while. or expect you to be able to solve all of their problems, or expect you to be joyful 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the next 952 years in a row without so much as a toothache as to come in the way of your manifestation of your blissfulness or something. You know, that's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of pressure just for, as the bhakta leader, as a temple president. But, you know, devotees that have actually understood Prabhupada's intention to spread this movement far and wide, that it does depend upon keeping the parampara going, and that does mean, as Prabhupada said and ordered, he said, I want all of my followers to become spiritual masters. So to take on that responsibility, it's phenomenal. And really has increased my respect for those devotees in at least tenfold or more. And we understand that sometimes devotees have taken that responsibility due to different effects. You know, Maya is still making war on all of us in this material world. Sometimes we've seen gurus became just too much pressure. Sometimes maybe took on too many disciples or had too many responsibilities. Or oftentimes we've kind of seen that a problem is sometimes a gurus may tend under the pressure of burden responsibility become a little too isolated. That oftentimes that's kind of the first and most serious problem that happens. Because we all need support systems. We all need friends. We all need people to help us carry the burdens of life. And spiritual masters have spiritual burdens, and to have, you know, support systems, devotees that are God brothers and extended networks of devotees to support them is very important. Sometimes devotees have got themselves in a position that they didn't have that support. They became a little isolated, and nobody could really talk to them or ask them, how are you doing, or is there anything I can do to help you, etc. And we've had a pretty good number of people that were serving as initiating spiritual masters who gave up their Krishna consciousness. It's a little slower in recent years, but it happens. So the question is, are those persons' initiation intact? If at the time of initiation a spiritual master is acting in his official role, his devotional role as a spiritual master, and later some difficulty comes up and he gives up for some time his Krishna consciousness, the initiation is still intact. If we took initiation at that time he was bona fide, that's still there. If it turns out that, has turned out sometimes in the past, that the spiritual master who gave initiation was not actually properly situated at that time, then that initiation may not be intact. And at that time it's recommended one should take reinitiation. If one feels some real need for additional help, if my spiritual master leaves, gives up Krishna consciousness, I may decide that I need extra help. I can take reinitiation if I choose to. GBC policy is there. You can take reinitiation. It's not as encouraged as strongly as it was years ago, but the option is still there. And certainly the main principle is to take guidance from senior devotees. So whether that means reinitiation or sometimes accepting a formal six-year guru, but definitely accept guidance. And I have many friends in Krishna consciousness whose gurus stopped acting in Krishna consciousness, and some of them got reinitiated and doing fine. Some of them accepted a formal six-year relationship with another ISKCON guru and they're doing fine. And some of them didn't accept reinitiation, but they're just taking shelter of senior devotees and they're doing fine. So we can see the potency of Srila Prabhupada is there through the parampara. Even if there's some difficulty, Krishna is still there to help us. Was that your question too? Okay.
Sure.
I remember, Guru Maharaj, I remember hearing years ago that if a guru has left the movement, then the disciple needs to take reinitiation because it is just like reconnecting with the guru parampara, like an electric cord which is pulled off the wall. It needs to be plugged back into that outlet, that kind of an explanation. Is that still valid? Because from what Anuttama Prabhu just said, it looks like you can either take reinitiation or you can take shiksha, that is good enough. And is that same equal to reconnecting with the disciplic succession?
You won't go to hell on a technicality. The question is practically, what works for you? Some people feel that having a spiritual master leave was very devastating, and they want that reassurance of a formal reinitiation. That's good for them. It really, when something like this happens, remember the super soul is there, and one has to inquire, why did this happen? Did I do anything that I could improve on? And that one just has to pray to Krishna to help me find the next step I need. And so you can establish a shiksha relationship without the reinitiation, formal rediksha, what do you want to call it, rediksha. And anyway, from a punar mantra gahan, it says in the Sanskrit, take the mantra again. If it's not necessary, it's not necessary. So the question is, it's not, to me, it's not like a legalistic question. You know, are you disconnected or not? And if you don't do the right rituals, you won't get connected. It's not like that. It's a question of the spiritual reality. Okay? Clear?
One particular part of your question is, or was, the link with the Siddhic succession, assuming that when that initiation took place, the link was established and is still established. The link is still there. Then all the things that the other devotees said. What's important is to receive association from qualified persons, whether it's this method, that method, the other method. And very individual. In part, it's from the heart. And in part, it's from guidance. Without, you know, I'm thinking of some specific details where, depending upon a particular situation, this was best. Depending on another particular situation, that's just fine. And so on. This is something that I think... There's a whole slew of questions here about those who are guiding you and what is their... What's the nomenclature... What's the etiquette, and all those kinds of things. So, I'll read a couple of them. Huh? I will, but I there are some other parts of it that I think both of you should speak, because you'll see. So here's this. These are all etiquette questions. How to see the guru is the heading. We hear that guru is one, and that the shiksha and diksha gurus are, quote, equal manifestations of Krishna. However, sometimes we hear that there is an, quote, order of importance, unquote, when seeing different gurus. The order of importance is usually presented as follows, and they give something that's not really standard. So, is it simply that because we cannot see the one guru everywhere, and it's helpful for neophytes to see these different kinds of gurus in different ways. And anyway, so edification, there's a very nice, two things. There's a very nice book, which, 20 years ago or so, was translated, Krishna Bhajanamrita, by a very exalted follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Narahari Sarkar. And it's an etiquette, guru etiquette book. Very nice book. PDF available, you can download it, translate it. Bandaswami translated it, and so forth. While the guru is one, and Shiksha Guru, Diksha Guru are to be honored equally because they're representatives of Krishna, there is a etiquette matter that when one is connected to disciplic succession through initiation, and one hears some pearl of wisdom or some illuminating message from some source, one has the etiquette obligation of bringing that question to the Diksha Guru. So that's like the High Court. And fidelity primarily goes there. No, it can be a conflict. If, just like in the lines of authority papers, some of you are aware, you know, the governance line and the spiritual line. Within the spiritual line, there can be conflict between Diksha Guru and Shiksha Gurus, plural. So what if Shiksha Gurus say something different than one's Diksha Guru? What to do? And the etiquette is, you accept that he doesn't use this language, but the High Court decision is the final decision. And those that are serving as Shiksha Gurus, part of their etiquette is to nurture the faith of the devotee, of course, ultimately in Krishna, but, you know, faith in their Diksha Guru. One who performs the service of Shiksha Guru that doesn't do that can disturb the faith. That's not good. So similar to the lines of authority, I'm referring to this because if you haven't read it, you're going to have to read it. It's part of our ISKCON law now to know this. In those who are initiated and so forth. So, I'm a Shiksha Guru. I have a relationship with someone who is one of Ravindrasrupa Prabhu's disciples. And one of those Prabhu's, this Ravindrasrupa Prabhu's disciples comes to me and says, you know, I heard such and such, and I'm not really sure about such and such. Can you verify? You know, if I heard him right, Ravindrasrupa Prabhu said such and such. Now, the first thing is go back and verify that Ravindrasrupa Prabhu said such and such. But if I have some concern, well, you know, I don't know if such and such is in line with our founder Acharya's teachings. I don't go and say, you know what? Ravindrasrupa Prabhu's bucket's got some holes in it. I don't do that. So let me something like, well, let me think about this. This is a very important question. Let me think about it. And then contact Ravindrasrupa Prabhu and say, did you say such and such? And maybe it wasn't exactly such and such. Can little clarification, please? So he, Diksha Guru and Shiksha Guru, can be in, you know, complete fidelity with one another's message. And so the Shiksha Guru can then go back to the devotee and say, guess what? Yeah. It wasn't exactly such and such, it was so and so. Or something like that. You know, the part of the responsibility of Shiksha Guru is to give Shiksha. But Shiksha should be in consonance with and resonance with the message of Diksha Guru. And supposing something, I can remember a point in time when it was not yet clear to me that in the category of Shaktivesh avatar, there are some Vishnu Tattva Shaktivesh avatars. There are. Nantashesha is an example. He's a Vishnu Tattva Shaktivesh avatar. And I was sitting in some class with Bhakti Trumaraj, and he said, you know, what scripture says, that there are some Shaktivesh avatars that are Vishnu Tattva. And I didn't like jump up and say, you're wrong, how can you say this? You know, some private, separate discussion, you know, could you clarify for me? And, you know, here's the reference, it's in Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which comes from Chaitanya Charitamrita, and here's the example. Oh, somehow I missed that. I mean, it's a detail, it's not an essence, but my response, anyways, if there's an example of how to do such a thing, where, you know, supposing he heard me say in class, it's only Shaktivesh avatars are only Jiva Tattva empowered by the Supreme Lord. Best if he privately says, you know, take a look at this. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and Prabhupada's purport indicates, you know, it's not just Jiva Tattvas, it's also, in some cases, Vishnu Tattva. So then, the point is, nurturing of faith is important. So that, and there are etiquettes with these different positions, although they're equal. They're to be equally respected. Nonetheless, there's an etiquette involved in interacting with them and amongst them. You want to add anything? Ravindra, you want to add anything? The person who asked the question, you want to ask it anything, any follow-up? Or anybody want to follow-up with that? Yes. Here comes the microphone.
Thank you. This was not my question, but I would like to just ask
follow up.
Some,
sure.
Yeah. In the case of like some scripture reference, that's pretty easy to understand. But we know that there are some gurus there; they have different opinion about, for example, position of woman or the managerial. You know, if the woman should be guru or not. So, from the perspective of the disciple, I have my Diksha Guru, I accept Shiksha, but there is some kind of conflict, you know, on this particular issue. And it's difficult for me to believe that they will change their opinion just because of me, you know. So this
and so many other factors.
Yes, yes.
Difficult to believe they'll change their position.
Or that one
that's
will agree, you know, just for the sake of supporting my Diksha.
So now what should you do? The question
yes,
is?
And this puts a disciple in very uncomfortable situation.
Uh-huh.
And very, I would say, very risky situation. So how from the perspective of the disciple, how we should, you know, deal, like, for someone, for example, it can come to the point that I don't even want to accept Shiksha Guru from this person because I know that his views on some particular issues are completely different than my Diksha Guru.
Uh-huh.
And this is, I don't think that this is proper,
well,
you know.
It's 6 o'clock and the bell's going to ring and, you know, we won't have to answer your question because...
Well, we have next session tomorrow,
yeah.
So...
two things. In Sri Brahma Samhita, text 37, purport, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur addresses, not in detail, not, you know, female Diksha Guru topic, but when this acharya and that acharya have difference of statements, seemingly self-contradictory. It's either this, but it can't be that. Or if it's that, then it can't be this. And how does someone process that? It's not the same, but it's similar. And in short, two things. Don't take sides. And just keeping, you know, plain street language. And differences are allowed. Now, I, not being on the platform of this acharya and that acharya, I may not have the capacity to understand this or that position in the veracity, absolute veracity of either one. I'm operating on the platform of faith. And my faith need not be disturbed because this may be right and that may be also right, depending upon the angle from which you look at it. That's like an acharya question. That's the etiquette. And as your Krishna consciousness or as one's Krishna consciousness evolves, like in the particular, it seems that Jiva Goswami is saying something different than Rupa Goswami. That's not possible. It looks like it. But, you know, on the Parakya and Swakya, looks like it. That's not, it's not. Then it goes on to explain why it's not, or how it's not. And one may not understand it. And then he explains why one may not understand it, even with the explanation. Because our consciousness is, you know, materially affected. We won't understand how this and that are both right. They're actually saying the same thing, or it appears they're saying different things, but they're not. In your case, I would advise two things. I mean, this particular, step back, wait till the smoke clears. And it may not clear. It may continue to be smoky. It looks like that's what's going to happen. You know, he's our GBC chairman. You know, he's got his fingers crossed that the smoke's going to clear. I don't know if he's counting on the smoke clearing. We've been going at this for some number of years now, Prabhu. And, you know, it comes almost the same vote every time, no matter what we do. But we're going to spend 2 full days, 3 full days in Tirupati, trying to get the smoke to clear. I'll make a prediction. Smoky. And
let me just mention one other little aspect to this. There is such a thing as transcendental disagreement. Let's serve Krishna like this. No, let's serve Krishna like that. It's a transcendental disagreement. It's not like the end of the world.
Let's go to RT. Srila Prabhupada ki. There's more to say, aside from this particular issue, but the principle.